All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
We have got actual footy to talk about, and everyone's pods are absolutely gone. We've all got the same team, and we're going to talk about some opening round results. Let's go!
Just done it from nowhere.
G'day and welcome to the Ball Boys AFL Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Casey, and you can find me on Twitter at Ball Boys Fantasy. And I'm joined, as always, by the reigning and defending Content Creators Cup champion, Luke Rogerson. Mate, how are you?
Good, mate. The weekend was a little bit of a fizzer, wasn't it? We wanted probably more footy than we got, especially because we were kind of cooped up at home.
Yes.
It would have been nice to get
nothing
the four
to do,
games.
But watch footy and just the two games to get us through.
Yeah, I don't know. I can see what the AFL are trying to do with opening round, but I think for me, more footy the better.
More footy the better, and if they're dead set on doing this opening round thing, why do we need to do these early buys? Why not have a split opening round or something like that? If you had five games and then four games, or I just don't see the need for the early buys. I think it's a little weird, but anyway. AFL's not going to listen to us. Who are we? We're just schmucks talking into a microphone. So we got two games to review. Now, it's the last opportunity we have this last week to do unlimited trades and change our side and then do everything we need to do without there being a restriction on us. So this is the final sort of few days before it all starts. So we start to get lockouts. We start to get players locked into our side as early as Thursday night this week. So we've got a lot to adjust to. So Hawthorn versus Sydney. Will Day. He came out at a pretty good game. Pretty good first half as well.
Yeah, pretty good first half. And I think it's one of those ones that you just lock away into your team now. You're going to get, obviously, that huge price rise. He's proven that he's the man. And even in a tough matchup against Sydney, he was able to get it done. It's similar to the free hit that a lot of us got on Lockie Whitfield last year. There weren't too many teams with Lockie Whitfield in there, but he forced our hand and so did Will Day this time around. So pop Will Day in at your M4, maybe M5, depending on how deep your midfield's running, but I'd have him in there.
So he was at 20% owned before this game. He's now at 45% owned. So yeah, there's a lot of risk to go against him. And I think the safe thing is just to lock him in. He's going to go up a couple hundred K in the first few rounds. So you really can't lose from that point of view. He does have a few tougher matchups coming up, but I think, as most underpriced premiums do, it'll all level out in the end. So, yeah, I've been keen on Will Day. This cemented that. I don't think we need to talk about him too much. I think it's a pretty safe lock into your side, whether he was in there or not, basically. Let's talk about someone who's a little bit more nuanced. Sick Dog. We liked what we saw in the first half.
Yeah.
We didn't like what we saw in the second half. Is it enough to scare us off?
It is for me. We saw the whole spectrum, didn't we? We saw like everything that we thought we'd see over the course of the season. We kind of saw
literally in one game.
So at halftime, we probably mozzed him because we were both liking what we saw, and we put him in the team. Very happy with it, and then
he gets tagged in the third quarter.
Yep,
and then goes forward in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think we said prior to the game we'd be happy to see the forward thing if the game was on the line. The fact that it came off the back of him getting shut out by Will Haywood and then he went forward for the entire last quarter.
Yeah.
It's probably just enough. You're paying enough for him that potentially scares me, that kind of scenario.
Yeah, well, just the fact that he's not going to get off to a hot start in terms of cash generation. So people have a chance to, if they don't jump on now and he does go pretty well, maybe they get in after his bye and not paying too much more than what you would pay now. So there's just a little bit more safety in waiting and having a bit more of a wait-and-see approach with someone like him. I still think, however, there is a world where he is a good starting pick. It doesn't punish the people who don't start with him now that he is going to be a bit more gradual. If he does end up being a good pick, that he's a bit more gradual of a riser in cash. So the fading Sicily, I think, is a little bit more of a safer play now because, yeah, that price rise is not going to be super fast. So you're going to have opportunities to get onto him, different to Will Day. So, but I can still see a scenario where, like, say, what if he's not tagged in that third quarter? Well, he was playing so well in that first half, like maybe he just doesn't end up getting moved because he's still being effective in that position that he started the game in. It also rained a fair bit in that second half as well, and the conditions didn't suit him. So, and at the end of the day, he scored an 81. It's not the end of the world. So I can see games where he still will have his pop scores, but yeah, it just seems a little bit less risky to go against a player like that now.
Yeah, even when the conditions went south in the second half, he still had remarkably sticky hands. He's great overhead.
Yeah, especially but in the forward line, yeah.
The thing, we had a chat with Gesty and Bales last night, and the thing that Gesty kind of mentioned, even when he went forward, he was still very much involved. He gave away 2 free kicks, so that, you know, takes 6, but he was still involved when he went forward. That's not going to be every single time he goes forward. He's an elite player regardless of where he plays, but the whole quarter forward, the getting tagged and then going forward, that just you want certainty with the role when you pick these players, and at the moment I don't
have
certainty.
Did he have a kick in front of goal, like 2 metres in front, and hand pass it off?
Unselfish.
Sick dog. That is not the sick dog we want to see. Like, that's... he gave away a point for the handball instead of a kick and then lost 6 points. So there's 7 points he left on the table there, which is basically getting him to his break even. So, Sicily, bad dog, bad dog. We want those fantasy points anyway we can get them. A player that I don't think I've talked about at all this preseason, but he put up 110 points, so people are going to ask questions about him. Lloyd Meek, you couldn't, could you?
You wouldn't have a peek?
I wouldn't have a peek at Meek. No, I don't think I would because I just don't see what's different here. I will say Grundy looked very average in that game. He was a really tough matchup last year. Based on a 1-game sample size, I'm wondering if that is something that could reverse a little bit. But yeah, Meek had his way with Grundy. I think Grundy made Meek look better than his 110 suggests.
Yeah, the 1-game sample size is something that I thought you spoke well about again last night with the Fanatics, was that both when you're looking at Grundy and Meek, it's just that. It's a 1-game sample size. Yep. Meek had games last year where he went 110, even 120, I think, in one game. And
yep.
Grundy obviously has games where he's really good and some games he's not as good. So it's opening round means more because those points count for our cash generation and our price rise. But you have to take it what it is. And it is just that, a 1-game sample size. Any player can have a good game in one game.
Yeah, you can cut out patches and paste them anywhere. The thing that people will latch onto is this is the first game. It's the only dot point for this season. So yep. It feels different. But if you just went, okay, plug and play any data set from the start of last year, or at any point of last year, you know, round 21, he goes 109 against the GWS Giants, and then goes 74 the next game, 86, then 80. So if that 109 was the round one, like, you've got the same sort of thing. I just don't think there's too much of a difference in the role for me to think that this is anything more than a good game. And I don't think it's something that we can, you know, latch on to with any great certainty.
Definitely. Angus Sheldrick left coaches feeling shell-shocked.
nice.
Yeah, thanks. Because he was subbed.
Yeah, he was subbed. And he wasn't even that good beforehand either. Normally, we've seen a really good points per minute Sheldrick.
Low tog.
This was, yeah, low tog. And just, yeah, it wasn't enough. So I think it's a pretty simple line through him. There's a few other options around that price point. If you want to go down to a rookie or up to another mid-pricer, I think there's a few different options that way, but you can't start Angus Sheldrick now, I think, if you were considering that. One player who can start... Do you want to say it?
Oh, I was going to say Matt Roberts, or you were going to say Matt Roberts, but I was going to ask whether you wanted to let everyone know how that played out for you over the course of the game.
Oh, right, yes. So, I at the start of the game, I was going into the game, I've been down on Matt Roberts, okay? So, I was cheering for him to get enough of a score that people who were keen on him were still going to be happy with. And that was, to me, going to be like, if he scored an 80, 85, I think the people who were keen on him were still going to start him, but I was happy enough to fade him. But then the cheering turned into, when he was in at quarter time, I was like, okay, he's going to be too bad that people are going to people are going to just fade him, and I'm going to think that people have missed a bad pick. But then he turned it on after that. And
you were trying to work some groovy voodoo, and it's fair to say it backfired.
I reversed Morrison too hard into a good score.
By the end of the game, you were a big Matt Roberts fan. And
now I'm Matt Roberts' owner, so so it's come full circle. It was a wild ride of emotions there.
Absolute clown.
Yeah. So, and I think it lined up with Sicily doing his thing. So Sicily became Matt Roberts for me in a pretty easy switch. So look, all in all, I think he'll be a solid pick. I think there's upside there. I think just in the defense, maybe I'm getting a little bit hung up on how much upside we're after in the defense, because I think he's maybe a 10 to 15 point upside guy. And I think in the defense this year, that kind of gets it done, really. So he's going to kickstart his cash generation nearly 30 points over his break even. So worst case scenario, if someone else pops and he disappoints, you can get off with a bit of a cash gen in your back pocket there. So, yeah, not too bad.
Sam Wicks, out of nowhere.
Yeah, out of nowhere. Off the top, right? Yeah, he's not someone, again, that we've considered, but he's a cheapish forward option in our fantasy teams, but played in defense in this game.
I've just checked his heat map, and that's a side profile peen.
We've got the first one of the season, guys.
Peen gate. Check out Sam Wicks's heat map. Has it been a year since we found one? Did we find any last year?
I don't remember there being any heat map peens last year, but
let's be honest, I'm looking for peens in the heat map. It's like
when you look up at the clouds, you know, you see what you want to see. This is what's going on here.
That's a side profile pain if ever I've seen one.
It's pretty hard to ignore. That's definitely a limp peen right there. So I think he, in all seriousness, if it was a different line, if he was a defender, I'd be all for it.
Yep.
But he's not. He's a forward. And we just have a lot of other forwards in our fantasy teams that I think take priority for him. So
is there, behind Davidson and, let's say, Stone?
Yes.
Is there an argument to look at one of these guys that, I mean, he's a lot more expensive than your basement price guys, isn't he? But he's got runs on the board, is I guess what I'm saying. If you don't have as much confidence in a Kakko, who's now going to miss two price rises, or Hewitt's a little bit more expensive, is he going to play? That, like, these kind of guys that we've been throwing names around, is there an argument to take runs on the board?
There is. I think there definitely is. There's he's only, what, 90K more than someone like a Kakko?
Yeah.
It feels a little dirty to have that on your bench, but you've at least got some guaranteed price movement. And his role is definitely better than a Kakko's or a... who's the other guy from Port Adelaide? I'm blanking on the name.
We always
Neil? Yeah, no, it's not Neil. Anyway, that guy.
Oh, I'll find it while you talk.
Port Adelaide forward rookie. I think you... It's just whether or not that 90K makes a big difference to your side. So I think if that's the difference between you getting a player you like or you don't like, I don't think it's worth paying.
Joe Berry,
that's the one.
He doesn't have a photo, that's why you can't
remember. Yeah, what's with these rookies not having a photo? Like, round one's like a few days away.
We've got to put faces to names.
Camporeale, he doesn't have a photo. I can't have him in my side if he's just going to be a blank, ominous
silhouette
in my team. That's not good for morale. It's creeping out the rest of my mids.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I've lost it. But in most cases, I think it's a bit much considering we have other good options.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one.
Who's the next guy we're going to talk about here? Oh, the next thing we're going to talk about is the Sydney double tag watch. They deployed this. They came out in the second half and they put... Jordan. They put Jordan on Will Day. And they put Hayward on Sicily. So they have, in the first game of the season, kind of showed their cards that they're willing to do this if players get off the chain. Is this something that we should be worried about? Because it worked. In the third quarter, Sicily scored next to no points. Will Day slowed down dramatically in the second half. I think he scored, 33 points in the second half. So is this something that we should be concerned about when factoring in the Sydney matchup? Because I think it might be.
Yeah, we'd hate to see negatively impacted players.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
This early in the season, I will say James Jordan. I think that they'll always
just realize what you did.
Yeah. I think James Jordan, they're always happy to deploy in that role. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Will Hayward was just stinking it up and they gave him a role. I think if Will Hayward was doing what he can sometimes do and, you know, set the world on fire and he's looking very dangerous, I don't think that they give him that role. But at the end of the day, Hawthorn was starting to get on top of this game and Sicily was a big part of that, and Hayward hadn't had any impact up to halftime. I don't know the stats, but it was very little impact. And so I think they said, hey, go and do a job for us. And he did it pretty well in the third quarter. So James Jordan, yes. Will Hayward, they've planted the seed now in Big Coxie's mind. So
yeah, do you reckon they've let the negative impacting player slip?
Yeah, they probably have. I think the rest of the competition's seen it now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Figure that one out, guys. No. But in their first couple of matchups, they've got Brisbane in round one. So, you know, that could be a Lockie Neal. That could be a Zorko, potentially, if the Hayward thing is there. Fremantle. So could it be a Jordan Clark on the halfback line, a Caleb Sarong? Are we still in agreement that it's Sarong over Brayshaw that probably cops the attention?
Hopefully,
because he's starting him. The other thing I think of is Will Day was like head and shoulders above everyone else, and they didn't unleash the tag until it was after halftime. So he'd already kicked three goals by then and sort of, you know, done the damage. So the fact that they didn't do it until halftime, you could see as a bit of an optimistic sign that they're not going to go into a game straight away and think of it that way. But we'll have to watch and keep an eye out for that one for sure. All right, let's go into the next game: Collingwood versus GWS. Let's talk about the Perry Perry man. Are we at extra hot Perry Spice?
I think we are. I mean, he's obviously come into a lot of teams since the performance yesterday, and so I think we have to upgrade him from Lemon and Herb.
Yeah, I think he's definitely upgraded from Lemon and Herb. It's just whether or not he's hot or very hot. I think is the question.
I think he was on track to be very hot, and I think he finished at hot.
He had the last quarter 6 points in the last quarter, had about 50% time on ground, so rested a lot of the last quarter. There was a lot of cramping going on, and he also only had 2 CBAs in that final quarter because of the low time on ground. I think he also played a bit behind the ball. Whether or not they were conceding the defeat, Collingwood, or they were just trying to look at something a bit different. I saw a quote from McRae today saying that they were trying to look at something a bit more structured, but they missed his presence in the midfield in that final quarter. So perhaps something that, you know, and it didn't work, obviously. So perhaps something that they will not look to experiment with in the future. And like you said, so if you take those, he had 84 points at three-quarter time. As a defender, if you're out matching your break even by three-quarter time in this year's defense, that's a big tick for me.
Yeah, happy days. 27 touches is great too. I think you're always going to have him a little bit handball happy in that role, but the thing too is 3 tackles, I'd expect that...
Yeah, more often it's going to be higher, right?
Yeah, I'd expect in the majority of games this season he'll exceed that. So just all ticks for Perryman, and like with Will Day, I'd suggest that you get him in your team.
Yep, I do too. I think he's at 40% owned, so a very popular player. Let's talk about Darcy Cameron. Deja vu, Luke. This happened...
Tell me more.
Last year, we were at the round zero, the first ever round zero, and Dancer Cameron comes out and scores a 131. This year he's done, he topped it. He went 136, 5 points better. Does this mean his average is going to be 5 points better this year? Is it a case of we can start a player again, has that round three bye, which is not as scary anymore, but still it's in our ruck line. Is Darcy Cameron someone that with fewer options? So last year we never really considered him because we had Tristan Sherry, we had Max Gorn, we had Brody Grundy. So, but this year there's fewer options. Is Darcy Cameron a legit play after doing a very similar thing the year before?
If you didn't watch this game, and I didn't, but have since spoken to you, obviously the big injury news was Briggsy going down in the first quarter. I think it was a concussion. So you can kind of even see a pattern in Darcy Cameron's scoring within this game. He has 16 points to quarter time, and then after
120 in the last three quarters.
So Briggs going down means that he's rucking against not only an undersized ruckman, but also a ruckman who wasn't expecting to be playing in the ruck during the game. And you can see it in his scoring. So yes, there's an argument to say that 130 is big enough that you could ride a price movement for Darcy Cameron. But if your expectation was to pick him and keep him as a pick, that I'm less keen on. But if you want to get a little bit fancy and say, hey, I think I can get this guy in for a nice price movement, I think he can do all right. It'll be, is it next week and then he has his bye, or next week?
I have two games and then
His bye. I'm more inclined to not talk you out of it, I think. But planning ahead for tricky moves like that, I think, can be fraught with danger as well.
I think I'm more in on this one than I am the Lloyd Meek pick. But I'm still not really into it. Like, he has 68% CBAs, 79% time on ground. Last year's CBAs was 75 for the season, 80% time on ground. So he's actually less CBAs in this game than his average from last year. So I just, again, I'm not seeing where the big difference is. You could point to Cox not being there, but I think McStay is, you know, the pseudo replacement for Mason Cox in a way. So I don't think it's necessarily like a big boost to his role and things like that. So
what do we think of Port Adelaide and then the Western Bulldogs in terms of?
It's pretty friendly.
Yeah, it's not a bad two game run going into the bye, and then maybe that's when you decide to do some fancy stuff.
I'm always just conscious of putting yourself in that situation where you're only picking a player to ride their price when they're not really at the price point when that's what you're picking them for. Like, you're picking him to be a premium, essentially.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily want to be stuffing around with our premiums early in the season if we don't have to. So I think those kind of plays are a little bit more your cheaper price points to be doing those kind of things. Not necessarily a guy who's priced, is he over 900,000?
Yeah, he is.
So it's a little bit fancy for someone at that price for me. All right, let's go on to the next guy here and go to the disappointment for the game, Nick Dacos, who had a terrible time with cramps in this one. A lot of people were cramping, but he definitely had the worst of it. Cramping in his calves, cramping in his quads, his groin, I think, at one point. I think at one point I spotted four physios working on him at the same time. There was one on each quad and one on each calf. And I thought,
imagine getting that type of attention.
I thought the rest of the team was just sitting over there twiddling their thumbs. And everyone, they're all cramping as well at the same time. And they've gone, fuck you guys, we're going to look after Nick.
Yeah, Nick, one of Nick Dacos' legs is worth two of his teammates.
Like, I shit you not, go back and rewind it. There was actually a time where four physios were working on him at the same time.
He was trying to run away from that little pest, Toby Bedford.
Yeah, and he was getting tagged most of the game as well. So he pops out a 60. Obviously, anyone who was planning on starting him, this is the Errol Goulden of last year. You got saved. So he's a guy you don't start with. You were hoping for a 130 and starting him. He missed that by, 70 points?
I don't know if I was hoping for it, but if it was there.
So the question is, does this make him a juicy upgrade target upgrade season?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely it does. He's going to have a break even up in the 140s, I would imagine, almost.
Yeah, maybe more.
Now, so I think it certainly does. It comes, he, I think, will be at his cheapest, not necessarily at a time that we're looking to upgrade. I think it'll be just before. But you never know what happens in fantasy.
I'm looking at his run. His run is tough. He goes Port Adelaide, Bulldogs, which should be a little bit easy, especially with their injuries. Bye, so he'll not score very much against the bye.
That's a tough opponent.
and then he's got Carlton, Sydney, Brisbane. So that's all in the first six rounds. I can actually see a scenario where he might bottom out in price, but you might not be looking to trade him in until that round seven, which starts to kick off the good fixtures here, where he goes against Essendon, Geelong, Fremantle, Adelaide, and North in a five-game stretch. So I think we can keep an eye on him, but don't just like pencil him in for round four off his bye, get him in, because he might still have like three tough matchups after that. So we can afford to be a little bit patient with this one, but definitely on the radar for an early trade target for sure.
Someone who went absolutely bang in the second half was Lachie Ashe. And this is, I'll be honest, not someone I was looking at, but the old man texted before the game and said, keep your eyes on Lachie Ashe. And at halftime, he was looking like a fool, as usual. But yes, after halftime, he looked like a rock star.
A rock star, yeah. A bit of a smoky here.
What's
for,
the go?
For
What's
Lachie
the go
Ashe?
With Lachie Ashe?
Yeah, he had a good year 2 years ago, I think. And we were all expecting him to take that next step and potentially become a 90-plus defender. But then he actually went backwards last year and regressed to a mid-70s guy. So he's a young player you've had coming, going. You've also got a few other like points leaving the side in terms of Peatling is gone. Tom Green didn't play there. I know they don't play the same position, but you just, from a market share point of view, these good scoring players leave the side. So those points are going to be picked up elsewhere. And I think he's a beneficiary of that.
Talk to me about the scoring, because I didn't watch this one, but he's had 100 points effectively in the second half.
It came in two different ways. So in the third quarter, he had 6 tackles, 8 disposals, 2 marks, essentially in that one. So, and scored 52 points. I really doubt we're going to see 6 tackle quarters from Lachie Ashe very often at all. So he had, what did he have? 7 tackles for the game. So he had 6 of his 7 tackles in the single quarter. I don't remember seeing him tackling a lot to the eye. So I don't know if he just got a bit of a friendly roll of the, you know how sometimes you sort of lay your hands on someone and you know the ball spills loose and doesn't go to the teammate, so you get credit with the tackle. So it might be worth going and rewatching that third quarter. The fourth quarter definitely seemed like a little bit more of a repeatable way for him to score, where he was just collecting a lot more marks and getting a bit of the ball from like a waxing type of view. So he had 11 disposals with 5 marks for 47 points in that last quarter. So It's that third tackle that sticks out. Third quarter that sticks out to me as a bit of an outlier. But with that said, that might take him from 125 to 105. You know what I mean? If it's maybe just a 30-point quarter or a 25-point quarter, so it's still solid. I think he is underpriced. And with a game where he's gone 50 points over his, like it's the same amount over he went then Will Day went over his price tag. The difference is I was considering Will Day before. I was not really considering Lachie Ashe before.
Because of how early their bye is, this is one that I'll consider off the bye. So if we see it again when they play this weekend.
It's a tough one though, because I think he'll be up nearly 100K by then.
So his price, he went into this game priced at high 70s, I think, off the top of my head. If we see another 100 plus, is there an argument to say that even by the time he comes off his bye, he still could be 10, 15
maybe
points?
Not 15. I think he might be 5 to 10 points unders at that point, potentially.
It'll also depend on whether a pivot is required from the players that you have in your team too. So yes. I guess it's one of those ones to watch if you picked a premium that maybe is going poorly and you don't have anything else to fix up. You could go there. Yeah, but something to just keep in the back of your mind, I think.
Yeah, look, I don't dislike the pick. If you could get, if you say you're not a big Sam De Koning fan, or you don't want to have a rookie starting on your field in defense, and you wanted to load up with those guys around the 700,000, I'd probably have Perryman and Roberts ahead of him. But he's in the mix now, I think, with your Bergmans, him.
Shorty's just a little bit
Shorty's a bit more, and I probably have him ahead still. But Rivers, like, he's, again, a bit more expensive. But he's in that type of bracket to me. And if you want to go maybe 4, maybe even 5 of those players deep in your defense, I think I would be considering Lachie Ashe as an option. Where he falls in that ranking order for you is a little bit harder to decipher. I think he and Bergman, to me, it might be tough to split, but you don't have the buy round to worry about with Bergman. But then again, you're not going to have the guaranteed price rise. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one for me to really sort of get a gauge on. I don't think he's going to fit my structure at the moment, but for some people, maybe loading up a little bit more heavy in defense, he definitely could.
A player that we love to watch, but not for fantasy reasons at all, is Sam Taylor. And he got off the chain.
He was legitimately the best. I know a lot of people are going to sing Callahan praises, but I think Sam Taylor was the best player on the ground last night or yesterday.
Well, he's elite at what he does, but yesterday he did something very different to what he normally does, and that is score a heap of fantasy points. So we're certainly not suggesting that he will score like that all the time, but given that he is cheap and given that maybe we're a little short on cheaper options down back, is there an argument to ride his cash gen with a mind to trading early?
I think there is. I think there is definitely a play to do that. I think it depends on which rookies we get in the defensive line. For example, if we don't get a Luke Traynor, we don't get... I don't know, there's no one really else putting their hand up. Like, if we don't get Luke Traynor on Thursday, or he's named as the sub, then you're staring down the barrel of, okay, do I start a Leak, who we're going to talk about in a second, but his job security doesn't look very good. A Bo Allen, who scored... 17 points in a full game. You've got Conley, who plays for the Saints. He looks to be a bit more of a defensive-minded midfielder. Defender. 230K. And the Saints have a few guys sort of playing a similar role. So his job security, I think, is a little shaky. And then a lot of very speculative picks. Some guys that haven't played full games in the practice matches. So there is a scenario where if we don't get those rookies and you want to push both the Essendon boys onto your bench, and you could play Sam Taylor at D6, guarantee yourself $100,000 rise in cash, because he's gone like 70 points over his break even. So he's going to go up a lot of money. He does have one game and then he sits on the bench. It just might be a kick the can down the road type strategy. But I do think it would depend on which rookies we get named. And I think Luke Traynor, for me, is the guy that I'm keeping an eye out for.
Yeah, certainly Traynor. It also probably depends on how hot you are on SDK as well, because I think he can serve that role a little bit as well. And you could argue that, I think you can argue that he has a better role for fantasy than what Sam Taylor does.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Even though Geelong want to do some weird and speculative stuff with their rucks this season. So I don't think it's one that I'll end up going to, but like you say, kicking the can down the road in some circumstances.
I've looked at it. I've looked at it. I think it's more likely I don't than I do, but yeah, it is something that I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being a good play. At least, look, he's by no means someone you're going to keep in your side for a long time, but just with the lack of options there and the quick cash, I think there's something to it.
Okay, rookies from this game, particularly GWS rookies, James Leake and then Max Grushevsky. You reckon I pronounced that one right?
Yeah. Grushevsky. Let's call him Gru.
Big Gru.
Job security concerns I have for both of them. Leak, I think if there wasn't an injury to Briggs, I think he would have been subbed out in this game. The Big Gru, I think, is warming a seat for Jesse Hogan there at the moment. I think the commentary basically said as much during the game. He did kick 2 goals and I think he got like a 50 or something like that. And a lot of people comparing him to like the Seth Campbell last year. I think it's different. Seth Campbell last year, we saw he was a regular part of their team. They also had the round 6 bye. So you could get 6 price movements in 5 rounds. That's a bit different to getting 2 in 1 round. The price movement's not as fast. So I'm not keen on having either of these players in your side. Your thoughts?
Yeah, riding the group pick could at least, I mean, he's going to get to at least that sort of value where then you can pivot to a rookie that, that pops. You've talked about this a little bit where you don't necessarily want all 230K rookies because you might then need to make cash to get to one that you like in a couple of rounds. So I guess at least you're going to get those, hopefully, two price movements where you get him up to that kind of 300K mark and then maybe you can do something from there. But if we can get somebody that's maybe got a little bit better job security, maybe Elijah Hewitt comes back and we were kind of on him throughout the preseason. Maybe you go a little bit deeper in your forward line and you just have Stone and Davidson on your bench. Maybe you're running like a Garcia at F6. Mm. Those options I think I like a little bit more than the group pick.
Yeah, I think I do it as well. Last little guy from here, rookie Connor Stone, was he was rock solid.
Nice.
Enough.
Just keep wheeling it out. It gets better every time.
And but, you know, he scored a 50. Do you think there's maybe some potentially bolder picks that we could go for?
That was good. Did you write that you down? Like that?
Yeah, I wrote it down. No. I was like, I was thinking of rock puns and I was thinking...
All the way home in the car?
All day.
All day.
Since yesterday. But yeah, do you think that he's done enough to be in our side?
That's really good. The only thing wrong with that is that I didn't think of it first. I think he has, mainly because of what we thought of Leak in the sense that we think that there's players to go out before him. I think he plays a little bit more of a friendly role.
I think he looked good. Like, I know he scored a 50. I think he played better than that 50 suggests. Like, he had some good kicks. There's a couple of times he got ignored on some leads, but there was some thirst there. And I think if he keeps playing like that, he'll get on it a bit more with those plus sixes. So I liked what I saw from him. And I think his security is a bit higher than the others.
With our rookies too, we love it when their team wins because when your team wins, there's less incentive for changes. So yeah, I liked it. Like that one. Lock it in.
All right. So those are the two round zero games. There's 35 minutes on two games of football there for you guys. But just to finish off the podcast, it's the final week, the final few days before round one begins. And the next time you hear from us, at least if you're not on the Ball Boys Patreon, which you can do, sign up today at patreon.com/ballboys. We will be talking to you, and games of footy will have played, Luke. We'll be coming to you guys on Friday with our normal live show. And I'm personally very excited to get back on the live camera.
How will we fuck it up this time? When we go live, the tech issues seem to just creep in.
New year, new us, Luke. No tech difficulties this year. You heard it here first. We're going to have a smooth sailing year. But what do we need to do to be prepared for round one? Well, here's a little checklist for you guys. Make sure you're across the lockout times first and foremost, which if you aren't aware, if you're a bit new to AFL fantasy or forgotten and suppressed the memories of last year because it went that badly, and trust me, I've been there, it's a rolling lockout. So your team will have unlimited trades until the beginning of the final game of the round. So only the teams that are, or the players in the teams that have played will be locked out. Now, I don't know if this is confirmed, but there is a small chance that if you had an incomplete team, that your team could get auto-filled if a game starts and you don't have, if you have a few spots missing. So my advice would be to avoid even the small percentage chance of that happening is have your team fully complete. Don't go in there and kind of put them in as you go, as some people would do. And I think it makes sense, but there is a small risk because I know that a lot of the Richmond and Carlton players often get put into those auto-filled teams and...
You just straight on create a new email address.
Legit to start again, get a different team and go without some of those players. So, yeah, just to avoid that horror show, my advice would be to have every spot in your team filled and just trade around it to sort of make those sort of things happen. So those lockout times are 7:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time, 6:30 for us, Luke. So nice and early, really good for us to get to bed on time. On Thursday, 6:40 on Friday, but before Friday's game at 5 o'clock, I think 5 o'clock Australian Eastern Daylight Time, you'll get the Sunday teams. So they'll be the best 23, and an hour before every game, you'll get the confirmed subs for each of those games. So The issue for us here, Luke, is a lot of those Sunday games have some relevant rookies for us. So I'm talking St. Kilda with the likes of players like Hugo Garcia, Hugh Boxall, Liam Conley, some players in there as well. Harry Boyd is another one that we should be monitoring as well. Adelaide, you've got Sid Draper. So you're not going to know if he's the sub until the first game on Sunday. He's definitely someone that could potentially start as a sub. Melbourne, you've got the players like Langford and Lindsay. GWS Giants, like, is Leek, you know, there, or is he playing as the sub? Connor Stone, is he sort of still in the side? I'd expect him to be there. West Coast, Bo Allen. Gold Coast Suns, Hewitt. Not really anyone there as well. So, there's a lot of relevant rookies in there. So yeah. What are your thoughts on if a player like, say, a Camporale, I think that's how you pronounce it.
We've pronounced it three different ways so far this podcast.
Have
so
I?
Go.
Camporale. If he's named and not playing as the sub on Thursday night, to save you a headache on potentially a late bit of news that these guys are the sub or they're, you know, even if, because it's a Thursday night, they're not even in the team, they're an emergency. Are you just going to lock a player like that in?
I think I am. I'm going to go with the safety of that. If the player was dead set no good and showed nothing, then I would say no. But Camporelli's shown, I mean, I think it was mid-70s, was it? Or did he
top
touch 80?
Scored at 86, so I want to
yeah,
say.
Top so yeah. It's even better. So I think that in a wing role there at Carlton, I think that he's good enough to lock him in and not speculate on those guys later. In some instances, we're just going to be forced to roll with it because we don't necessarily have rookies coming out of our eyeballs. But yeah, in a case where I'm flip-flopping, I'll probably flip instead of flop.
I think I agree with you there. I think it's the safety and in the uncertainty. And at least if you know he's not going to be the sub, he's playing Richmond, you'd hope he'd at least get a decent game. And if you want to do a bit of a rookie fix-up after round one, that's kind of what those trades are for. So at least you're... Fingers crossed, not starting someone who you know doesn't move in price at all because they are the sub or whatever the case may be.
Your next, second dot point here says don't panic.
Don't panic.
The minute that somebody says don't panic.
Panic!
It incites absolute panic.
Yeah. Look.
Anarchy.
If you're anything like us and you've been listening to us for a little bit.
If you're anything like us and you've been listening to us. Problem is, we don't listen to each other.
No, well, yeah, maybe, yeah, those two things maybe contradict each other.
If you're nothing like us,
if you're nothing like us, and you've been listening to us, you've thought about your AFL fantasy team a shit ton this preseason. Oh, you spent many hours
dreaming about it.
Dreaming about it, talking to people who don't listen to you about it, you know, talking to a microphone, hoping people will listen to you about it, convincing people on Twitter to listen to you about it. So if something happens unexpected, don't throw all that out the window and, you know, pick the first guy that's named and they're there. They've got the green dot. If you have a plan, just go with what you've researched. And if curveballs hit you, the next dot point here is have backup options. So those two kind of go hand in hand. Don't panic and have some backup options if something unexpected happens when it comes to team announcements.
Yeah. And if you have been doing all those things and been sweaty through the preseason, like Mitch described, you probably do have contingencies, teams that have different structures so that you know that if something doesn't quite go the way you've planned it, you can kind of pivot. But you don't want to pivot so far that you rip your team apart if sort of injuries or some things go wrong, which yeah. You used a good example last time on our last episode where you just tore me apart for what I did. Was it 2 years ago?
I think it was 2 years ago, yeah.
The year that I started
with... Or a year too early on Tristan Sherry.
Yeah, Tristan Sherry, and then the injury there had just repercussions. I was up till like 1 a.m, working out how to get rid of Jordan Dawson and trade in Hayden Young and just completely screw myself.
Yeah.
So don't do that. There'll always be a way to kind of get yourself out of it, but you don't want to compound something by going against the research that you've already done in the preseason.
Yeah, 100%. And a thing that I like that I think the coaches panel, Minimunk especially, talk about a lot is there needs to be a reason why every player is in your team. You know, narrative, you can talk yourself into, this is why they're going to improve, this is why they're going to be better. And when you make those last-minute adjustments, you don't necessarily have the time or that you're in the right headspace to kind of really go through that checklist. And I think it's going to hurt your team more than help your team in the long run because... even if it's a bad injury like that Tristan Sherry one where he went down in price, was at an awkward price in the ruck line, sometimes the simplest option is a little bit of a two-trade restructure the next week. Because I think Matty Mottram, who, I don't know, was that the year he won? He did at least very well. I think he was maybe a top 20 side that year. He, you know, did a simple one up, one down, and then was off to the races again, having the same injury. So I think it is an important, valuable lesson that you've taught us there, Luke. Thank you for demonstrating that for educational purposes 2 years ago.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
The next top point you've got is about VCs and Cs, and this is something that we've talked about a little bit, about having, let's say, 2 to 3 guys in your side currently that you'd be happy to put the VC and the C on. But probably not a lot of us have looked at exactly when they play in the first couple of rounds.
Yes, so we should start to look at that now.
Just to give you an example of 3 popular players that actually play at the same time in round one, North Melbourne and Port Adelaide aren't playing each other, but they play at the same time at 7:30 daylight saving time on, I think it's a Saturday night. That means that you ain't getting like a Connor Rosey VC into a Sherry C in round one. So you need to give that some consideration. If you've got, let's say you've got Sheasel, Sherry, and Rosey, and these are 3 guys that you want to look at putting Cs and VCs on, that's not going to look as awesome for you. If you have a Brayshaw, he plays earlier that day, so maybe there's a Brayshaw VC into it, one of those guys C. If you're rocking a Dawson, he plays the following day on a Sunday. But I guess the point is just go and have a look at not only for round one, but rounds 2 and 3, and just look at what your captaincy and vice captaincy structure might look like.
That's very good advice. I think that is definitely something you should consider. No, well, broken clocks where I struck twice a day. The other thing I want to touch on, especially for round one, is surrounding the 30 green dots versus the red dots, and sometimes using that VC as a tiebreaker. If you're dead set on having the 30 green dots and you would only pivot away from that with a big score, then I would be putting a VC on someone early in the round before your number one option. So if I take my team, for example, like I'm potentially walking into the round one matchup with Andy Brayshaw as my, you know, favorite captain option in my team for round one. There's only 2 games before them. So if I was of the mindset of, okay, I'm going to get 30 green dots, that's my mantra, that's what I'm going to do, then I might look to go a VC on someone like a Tom DeConing or someone like that in the first matchup, because it's a positive matchup against Richmond. Even though I might have better options later in the round, I want the best option to be my C, because I don't want to have to VC Andy Brayshaw and he gets to like a 115 or whatever, and I'm okay, well, I can't take that unless I get a red dot in, which is not something I wanted to do. I want to be banking on that my most confident option whilst I have 30 green dots. If you're going in with a red dot specifically to use for loopholing, different story. I would actually do it almost the complete opposite. Take your most confident one, go with the VC on that one, and then you've got at least a double dip if it doesn't work out, to go with your next best after that.
Also making sure that red dot is a player that plays
later
after those players that you're mentioning VCing and seeing. Yeah. That's always one.
So I think the Saints and West Coast are probably the 2 teams that you're probably looking at there. Both teams play on Sunday in round one. So, and after a lot of those good round one captains. But the big boys, cool. I'm working on them right now as we speak. On Thursday, the people at Patreon will get the list of the big boys. And on Friday, we'll go through the top 5.
See, if you're not on the Patreon, you're not getting the big boys until after one game's already happened.
And I can say one of my top 10 play that Thursday night. So that won't be revealed until after that game. And also, you'll only get the top 5 for the Friday one. If you want to go and check out the Patreon again, patreon.com/ballboys, and stay tuned for more content. The Patreons will also be getting the early season blueprint for early season trades, our fix-up trades, what to do, what to look for, what we're prioritizing at that time of the year, and then the Q&A on Wednesday, and then the big boys on Thursday. Basically, something every day this week.
Yeah, then following week, you're going to have your trade targets, you're going to have Rojo's reviews, so
Plenty. We had our debut of Rodro's reviews. Very nice, easy one for you with just with two games, and you still miss half the games on the weekend.
Just a little taster of what you can expect throughout the year on the Patreon.
No, for sure. So go off and sign up there, guys. Much appreciated to everyone who has done that already. And if you enjoy this podcast, guys, make sure, please give it a big thumbs up if you're listening over on the audio version and you haven't done already. It's been a mammoth preseason for us, guys, so we would very much appreciate if you take 10 seconds out of your day, go and give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you are subscribed to the YouTube channel. And we are going to see you guys in our round one live show at 5 p.m. Australian Daylight Time. Ready for a big season with a beer in hand, Luke.
You got some beers in the fridge?
Absolutely, mate. They'll be ice cold for us. Let's go. Until then, guys, we'll see you later. Bye.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.